So I've got something exciting to share. My book, What Are You Thirsty For? Rethinking Alcohol and the Life You Want, is now available for pre-order. It's about rethinking your drinking, not because you necessarily have to, but because deep down you know there's more waiting on the other side. It's about creating space for clarity, for calm, and the version of you that doesn't need alcohol to cope. So if you're looking for a refreshing take on alcohol identity and desire, just tap the link in the show notes and pre-order. Right, let's get on with the episode. Welcome to the Big Drink Rethink podcast with me, your host, Anna Donaghy. If you've noticed that the drinking culture in the UK is changing and you're curious about why and what this means to your world, then this is the podcast for you. Throughout this series, I will be chatting with the thought-provoking, forward-thinking people at the heart of this shift to find out what makes them tick and to explore the sober curious perspective from all angles. And I'll also be giving you oodles of personal tools and tactics to help you get on board the Big Drink Rethink. Why, hello, and welcome back to the Big Drink Rethink, a show which has been going for well over a year now, which is wild and brilliant. And what I've loved most isn't just the guests who have been great, or watching the stats and the charts grow. And thank you to anyone who's ever shared or rated, because that helps enormously. It helps other people find the show, which is brilliant. Very gratifying to see the listenership growing. But the best thing, the thing that I've loved the most, is the messages that I get, the direct messages, the emails, because that's where I suppose the real stuff lives for me. Getting feedback on how or why the content of this show is helping, but also sort of seeing the gap, seeing the need, and being able to answer listeners' questions or create tools that I think can help in response to what people are saying they need. And it's fantastic to see such a varied audience. It's brilliantly varied. I know that we've got sober curious listeners, loads of those. We've got healthcare professionals. We've got people well into recovery. But there's a group that I keep hearing from time and time again. I hear from lots of different people, but the one that I hear from probably most often is young mums. Mums who are in the thick of it, who are tired, wired and stretched thin. Mums who are doing their absolute best and still wondering why. Why does this feel so bloody hard? And by young mums, I don't just mean mums who are young themselves, but mums of young children, babies, newborns, toddlers, you know, a group for whom I feel a great deal of empathy, and their questions really resonate with me. I get asked a lot, actually, you know, when did my drinking really start to escalate? When did it start to ramp up? And the honest answer for me is early motherhood. And even though I'm now 54, I'll say that quietly, I'm 54. And my little bundles of joy are now 14 and 17 and taller than me, which I can't get my head around. I really remember that time in my life, and I recognize it to have been a pivotal point in my relationship with alcohol. It's when it took a turn from something that had largely been social to something that was incredibly emotional and something that had been, I say, relatively harmless. I mean, it's relative. I was a very heavy drinker, but I'll say relatively harmless, into something that was quite a harmful coping mechanism. You know, my life that had once centered around sort of personal freedom, which I valued enormously, became, like it does for many, many people, an endless juggling act of responsibilities and sleep deprivation and this quiet sort of relentless pressure that I felt so much to hold it all together, or to be seen, maybe. Maybe that's more the point, to be seen, to be holding it all together. So why am I telling you this? I am telling you this because finally, I have decided to create a separate community for mums. It's been at the back of my mind for a long, long time, to be honest, and I haven't really been sure how or what this would look like. And I've done it now. I've wanted to create a supportive space just for mums for a while. Mums who want or need to rethink their relationship with alcohol and navigate, you know, this tumultuous time in life in a different way, a healthier, more fulfilling way. I'm very prone to overthink. I'm very prone to overcomplicate. So in the end, I'm very pleased to say that simplicity has won over, and I have simply created a Facebook group called The Big Drink Rethink, Mummy Doesn't Need Wine. It's for mums who are feeling the pressure, who are feeling the exhaustion, and this background sense, this sort of quiet whisper that, you know, there must be another way. No shame, no labels, no pressure, just honest, compassionate conversation and support from people who really get it. So in this episode, I'm going to announce that group, which I've just done, and I'm going to share a bit of my own story, how motherhood changed my drinking and why we need to talk about it, why we need this group. It's my story. It's a personal story. I've told it in pieces before. Other people's stories are slightly different. Everybody's story is individual, but hopefully in sharing a bit of mine, there'll be bits and pieces in here that will resonate. I mean, the first thing to say is I was 36 when I had my first child. I've got two daughters. I was 36 when I had my first daughter and 39 when I had my second. And up until that point, I had partied and enjoyed all the time that I was basically going through university and then building an incredibly boozy career in advertising. So I won't go back over all that again. It's there in previous episodes. But it had been a pretty booze-drenched and self-indulgent time, such that the interesting thing is when I got pregnant, age 36, I almost felt a strange form of relief, like the decision to stop was being made for me. Not necessarily even just stop drinking, but stop this sort of lifestyle, which I would have said I enjoyed very, very much. But I guess, you know, part of me was beginning to realize it was taking its toll, and it had to come to an end at some point, I thought. Like the decision to stop was being made for me. Not just because not supposed to drink when you're pregnant and I didn't, but because after that I wanted things to genuinely be different. I didn't drink for my pregnancy. I wanted a healthy baby more than I wanted a drink at the end of the day. And when I came to go on maternity leave, walking out of the advertising agency for the last time and sort of heading off through Soho to the Piccadilly line to go home and start my maternity leave, I actually did believe that that was it, that this was the start of something completely new, a sort of a non-drinking me. I was kind of like, you're having a baby, for God's sake. You need to grow up and enter this kind of next stage of life with an air of maternal responsibility. I honestly believe that, and I genuinely feel that I wanted that. But what I didn't realize was that the real spiral was about to come. So motherhood is often painted as this blissful, natural thing, all sort of soft focus lighting and tiny socks and jelly cat toys and a beautiful nursery. And for so many people, the reality is messier. It hit me like a ton of bricks. It hit me in ways I wasn't expecting. It demanded a humility and a selflessness and patience I hadn't exactly been building in my drinking years, you know, and instead I'd been falling in and out of bars for, you know, the best part of two decades, fine-tuning my ability to handle my emotions with alcohol and failing to ever actually process my emotions. And now, with a baby in my arms, I felt really ill-equipped for the role that required everything I had never practiced. And then there was the identity shift. Suddenly you're not you anymore. You're someone's mum. The exhaustion that no one, quite frankly, can prepare you for. The guilt for not feeling grateful all the time. The uncertainty of whether you're doing any of it right, the fear that you're doing it all wrong, the loneliness, to be honest, and this weird quiet grief for my old life. I really felt that. And the boredom that no one talks about. I was part of an NCT group, and I have friends in that group that I'm friends with to this day. We both, you know, three of us still get together regularly. And I clung to them during my maternity leave for sure, but I still felt the real loneliness and boredom of all those hours spent at home in between, just me and, you know, a baby that at that time in life wasn't necessarily giving me much feedback, as it were. So yeah, there was boredom, and that doesn't tend to necessarily get talked about so much. And of course, then the shame. You know, the shame for feeling all of those things at a time in life when I was, you know, led to believe that I should be feeling so much more joy and so much more kind of bliss, I suppose, in a way. What it boils down to is, overarchingly, I had been the main character in my life. Right up until that point, I had lived how I wanted to live for the most part. And suddenly I was responsible for this tiny human being, and I wasn't the central figure anymore. And that is a massive shift, along with the emotional weight of all of that, the overwhelm of doing everything for someone else, often invisibly, and the quiet fear that you're somehow doing it all wrong, this awful feeling that I had of inadequacy. So yeah, I felt hugely ill-equipped. I didn't have the tools. I just didn't have the tools. I would sit here now as a coach and say that those tools are the tools that needed, you know, that I would have needed to say, calm down and, you know, regulate my nervous system in a different way. I would never have used that language back then, but it is about sort of being able to regulate your nervous system and cope. Just cope when things feel chaotic or they don't go the way you want them to. And goodness knows that when you're a young mum, things don't often go the way you want them to. I didn't have those tools. And then when you layer on a hefty dose of sleep deprivation on top of that, you know, constantly feeling tired, physically and emotionally tired and wired, then it's really easy to see how alcohol becomes a shortcut to relief. And bloody obvious to see when you think about it, if it's all you've really used in life up until that point. So my naivety in thinking that I was going to go from this sort of booze-soaked existence and sort of swan off calmly into motherhood with no better tools was, well, it was incredibly naive, because what is motherhood if it's not just one tsunami of emotions? And if alcohol has always been your go-to for emotional management, then of course it's going to re-enter. Of course it is. So yeah, I mean, looking back, I don't know what I was thinking really. The wine just crept back in. And about 3 months, 4 months after my first daughter was born, I was probably drinking a bottle of wine a night. And of course, it was no longer on that largely social basis. This was now me, alone, as a way to self-soothe. It actually became me time. It became that buffer between me and the chaos. A way to feel a little bit more like myself, my old self probably, just for 20 minutes. You know, those things you celebrate, the 5 minutes there, the 15 minutes there, the 20 minutes there. Oh my God, that's a complete luxury. 20 whole minutes to yourself. Those moments became me time. And it was self-numbing, as, you know, masquerading as self-care. A glass to unwind, a glass because the day was rough, a glass because, you know, I hadn't managed to get out the door and I was, you know, the day wasn't going as I wanted it to go, or a glass to celebrate that I had managed to get out the door and I was nailing the day in my mind, or a glass because bedtime routine was a war zone and God, I felt like I deserved it. So this subtle creep from being a treat into quite literally being a survival mechanism. Now, I know now that it was all about dodging the discomfort the frustration, the fear, the uncertainty, the feeling of inadequacy that I just didn't know how to name at the time. I wouldn't have put my finger on any of those emotions and said that's how I was feeling. I was just really keen to numb anything that came up uncomfortable for me. It felt like a shortcut and a very socially sanctioned pause button, actually. Something that soothed the edges when everything felt a bit too sharp. And actually, I say socially sanctioned because the truth is, if you're a mum, pouring a glass of wine at the end of the day is really, really common. And people just laugh and nod and go, yeah, yeah, same, me too, me too. You know, and you get memes about it. You get mugs that say, you know, mummy's sippy cup on the side. And I actually remember being gifted a personalised wine glass, or a big, big wine glass with my name on. It was literally the size of half a bottle of wine. A normal size measure of wine would have sort of paled into insignificance and barely touched the size of the bottom of the wine glass. It was literally a half bottle sized wine glass. And, you know, in all the shops, all the sort of catalogues, all the gift t-shirts that say, you know, wine time is me time. Stuff that really fuels mummy wine culture. And it's gained so much traction and agency because it makes mums feel like we're not alone in this hard stuff, that, you know, every time we share it or wear it or laugh at it, we're kind of reinforcing it, not because we're bad mums, but because we're tired and we're just looking for that sort of shared humanity and that shared empathy and connection. And again, looking back, because isn't hindsight a wonderful thing, I realised that whilst alcohol numbed the feelings I wanted it to numb, which in the moment can feel like relief, it also blunted the feelings I wanted or needed to actually move through to feel better. Yes, it paused my discomfort, but it also completely kiboshed my ability to deal with future discomfort. And that pause, by the way, it didn't come with peace. It came with real disconnection from my instincts and from my emotions, from myself. And I've mentioned this before, but nothing highlighted this more to me than when my first daughter was born, and about a month after we brought her back from the hospital, my mum came to stay. I really vividly remember this episode. My mum had come to stay, and one day my baby girl was crying in her Moses basket. And I was just stood there in the corner of the room by the bookshelf, looking through a book, desperately trying to work out what might be wrong. I'm laughing now, but I wasn't. I was crying too. I was frantically flicking through this book, completely lost and looking for clues. And I remember my mum saying to me, Anna, what the hell are you doing? Put the damn book down. You're not going to find the answers in a book. And through my sobbing, through my tears, I told her that, you know, I just didn't know what I needed to do. And she had to kind of prize this book out of my hand. And she simply said to me, you do. You do. You know how to do this, but you're not listening. You're not listening to your own intuition. You've got a mother's instinct, but you're not listening to it. And I just remember thinking, no, I haven't. I don't have that. I literally couldn't hear anything. I couldn't hear the answers coming. And I didn't believe, I didn't trust that they were there. And I know with all of my heart, looking back, that I had literally, you know, become disconnected from my emotions over a long period of time drinking before pregnancy. And then even in that month when Freya was home, I had just become disconnected. I suppose from that kind of compass that we're supposed to have, that intuition, that sort of internal mentorship and instinct, it had just gone. And I was therefore looking for clues as to how to raise my baby on the pages of a book. And my mum was basically asking me to trust myself and to know that I had those answers and that they would come to me if I let them. And that I would grow into this role, even if I hadn't slipped into it naturally, which I clearly hadn't. You know, the moment that I brought my daughter home, she was telling me that if I listen to my emotions and I listen to my instincts that I would grow into this role. But I do know that alcohol disconnects you from your emotions. It's what we drink it for. And I do know that alcohol and growth simply do not go hand in hand. So the very, very sad thing is, again, looking back with this benefit of hindsight, is yes, I was using alcohol to turn down the volume on stress, but I was also disconnecting myself from my own wisdom. And I was hijacking my joy, because remember, you know, I'm painting a bit of a bleak picture here, but I'm just sharing how I felt at the time. But amidst all the emotional chaos, motherhood is essentially an amazing time. You know, and it could and should be perhaps a fantastic, joyful time. But those highs, you know, you can't feel them when you're numbing. They're not as vivid. Sometimes they're not even noticeable if you're an emotions number, because that's what alcohol quietly does over time. You can't selectively numb. You can't say, take the edges off my stress, please, but keep my joy sharp and vivid. You just can't. So, yes, it takes the edge off negative feelings temporarily, but it also takes the edges off the positive feelings. And over time, it just takes the edges off of you. And so it went on for me. Because the thing about early motherhood is, just when you think you're coming out of the other side, out of the newborn fog and the sleep deprivation and that intensity, you're just hit with something else. That's just motherhood, isn't it? It just morphs. The emotions don't end, they just morph. Baby number one gets a bit older. Maybe baby number two comes along. In between, perhaps the stresses of going back to work, the emotions around that, the tiredness associated with that. And for me personally, you know, the exhaustion just turned into overwhelm. The uncertainty became, you know, a pressure just to get it all right. All those feelings associated with maternity leave just morphed. I began to, feelings of guilt were massive. Guilt for going back to work. Guilt for wanting time alone, guilt for feeling like you're never quite present enough, and then you're juggling the work, nursery drop-offs, tantrums, you know, and your own simmering self-doubt that says everyone else seems to be managing this better than me. And alongside all of that, a creeping perfectionism, wanting to be calm and conscious, and a lunchbox packing maestro to be, you know, emotionally available and a screen limiting parent, whilst also somehow crushing it at work and keeping the house running and maintaining my friendships and a sense of self. And alcohol just continued to be my reward. And again, you know, it felt at the time like a reset button. But obviously what I learned, and what so many of us are starting to really question, is that reward is actually costing us a lot more than it's giving. I didn't need another meme telling me it was okay to drink through the hard days. I didn't need another slogan on a mug trying to make me laugh whilst I quietly felt like I was sinking. What I'd needed desperately was support. Not a judgment, not a label, just someone to show me that there was another way through this besides reaching for the wine. I honestly could not have imagined walking into AA at that time. It's not for everybody anyway, whatever stage in life. It's, you know, it is a fantastic organization, but it's not for everybody, whatever stage of life you might be in. But certainly at that stage in my life, it was inconceivable that I was going to go. It felt like a massive step, way too definitive, way too wrapped up in a story that I didn't feel part of. And with such big consequences at that stage of life, I imagined, you know, here I was responsible for young children and often their playdate friends, that label of alcoholic. I mean, no way, no way. What I needed was for someone to say, you're not broken for finding this hard. You're not weak. You're not alone. And there are other ways to cope. I needed support and I needed those other ways to cope. I needed better tools, tools that would help me become. I know that sounds a bit wanky, but, you know, tools that would help me become more resilient, become the mum I wanted to be, become more self-compassionate, become less self-critical, become able to manage and feel and experience my emotions instead of numbing them. Tools to even just help me acknowledge my emotions, for God's sake, without judging them. And that is why I've created the Big Drink Rethink Mummy Doesn't Need Wine Facebook group. It's a space for mums who are questioning, who are curious, or maybe who are actively trying to cut back, or just quietly wondering if there might be another way. A space for honesty and compassion and proper grown-up support, without shame, without pressure, and without needing to label yourself anything at all. You don't have to have a plan. You don't need to be at a certain point on the journey. You just need to be curious. Is this really helping me? And what are those better ways to cope, to enjoy this stage of my life, simultaneously nailing it, feeling my emotions, growing into this role, and developing a resilience for all the stages that motherhood is going to lob at me? And it will. It does. And you'll find that support in this group. You know, not just for me, but other mums too. Other mums who get it. But I will be there. I will be sharing tools and tactics that have helped me and my clients. Posting daily. I'll be doing live streams, providing guides and real honest conversation prompters. Okay. And if any of this resonates, if you're tired of wearing a smile that tells the world I'm fine when you're not, when you're honestly feeling like you're tearing strips off yourself, then this space is for you. As I said, the group is called The Big Drink Rethink, Mummy Doesn't Need Wine, and the link is in the show notes. But it's www.facebook.com/groups, Mummy Doesn't Need Wine. So the standard bit, www.facebook.com/groups, and then the name of the group, Mummy Doesn't Need Wine. Come join me there. Please let anyone you know of who you think would benefit from it know about the group. Let's grow it together and let's be there for each other. Brilliant. Okay, look, thank you for listening. I will be back next week with another episode of The Big Drink Rethink. Thank you for listening and getting curious. Please rate, review, and follow this podcast on Apple or Spotify or wherever you're choosing to listen. And don't forget to tune in to the next episode. And you can find out more about The Big Drink Rethink by heading to my website, thebeliefscoach.com. That's the beliefs, BELIEFS coach.com, where you will see clear links to the show.